Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We go to the lines. Tom of McFarland, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Tom?
Good morning, Matt. I just wanted to call to see if I get your opinion and see if you had a chance to read the most recent ruling out of the Supreme Court, where a man who I want to say is in Texas or a similar Western state, he was appealing. He's on death row, convicted for murder back in the, I think, 80s, 90s. And on appeal, it turns out that there was a preponderance of evidence that exonerated him. And the appeals court ruled also that he had inadequate representation with his attorneys. He had public defenders who really didn't know what they were doing and, you know, did not make a very good case for him. So the appeals court overturned his conviction and, you know, released him from death row. But the Supreme Court has just ruled, authored by Thomas, that simply being innocent is not enough in order to have a conviction overturned. That it's not the job of the federal court to determine this. This should have been resolved at the state level and not at the federal level. So they put the conviction back in place along with the sentence. Even though they acknowledge that, yeah, he might have been innocent, but you know what? Just because he had bad legal representation, that doesn't mean that his conviction should be overturned.
Yeah, I've not read that case, but let me comment on it, Tom, because I'm familiar with many cases like that. And first of all, I want to put in a plug for public defenders. My brother was a public defender, and the public defenders that I knew have a very tough job. They're not paid very much, and they do a heck of a job. They really do. And a lot of people will say, oh, I don't want a public defender. I want a private lawyer, which is great. A lot of good private lawyers, too. But you're really missing the boat if you don't, frankly, acknowledge the fine work of the public defenders. That said, here's the way I would respond to that. I'm not familiar with that case, and I want to thank you, and I will definitely read it. But Number one, when it gets to the Supreme Court, the whole idea, if this originated in state court, then it was a habeas corpus petition. And this, you may be talking about the Shin case, S-H-I-N-N. I'm not sure. I'm going to go back and look at it. But if there, for instance, is DNA that says that, you know, somebody else did it, that is something where they will reverse and they'll send it back for some further inquiry. If, for instance, there was one case, believe it or not, where the defense lawyer fell asleep, I'm not kidding, right in the courtroom, heads on the table, and he's not making objections and all that, that gets overturned. If there is a racial imbalance in the jury, the prosecutor just strikes all black jurors, for instance, that'll get overturned. When you say preponderance of the evidence, there are three levels of proof in criminal law, in the law itself: preponderance of the evidence, clear and convincing evidence, and beyond a reasonable doubt. Preponderance of the evidence is what prevails in a civil jury, for instance. And the analogy is you stand there and you weigh all this evidence on both sides and it tilts ever so slightly one way, that supports a verdict for that direction. Clear and convincing evidence isn't used very much anymore, but it's kind of like a little more burden is needed. Beyond a reasonable doubt is that you can't even have a reasonable doubt. If you have a reasonable doubt, you've got to acquit. And what distinguishes us from everybody in the world? Now, this is a conservative right-wing court. There's no doubt about it. I can't comment without knowing all the facts. But that is a determination that's made by the jury. As long as it's done legally and lawfully, and by that I mean they don't exclude black jurors, the defendant, defense counsel doesn't fall asleep at the table, that kind of thing. Now, what happens if a judge looks at it and he says, well, I would have acquitted, but there is enough evidence there to say that beyond a reasonable doubt, a jury could have come to a different conclusion. They'll uphold the jury system. So bottom line, I don't like Thomas. I don't know what he's done in the Roe v. Wade reversal case. I don't like any of this. I'd want to know a lot more about that. You know, why did the appeals court overturn? Was there DNA evidence that was unaccounted for? Was there defense counsel misconduct? Everybody who appeals says that their lawyer did a lousy job. And you can't have the Supreme Court in every case just reassessing the evidence. So what you said causes me concern because of the low opinion I have of the Republicans on the Supreme Court. But that said, there's a whole lot of law on that that have to be looked at, and I'd want to look at it. Tom, thank you very, very much. If you want to text the name of the case, if you have it, to Sam, I will read it and comment next time. Mark from the SAC, my friend, thanks for calling. You're next. What's up, Mark from the SAC?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Matt. You were talking a lot yesterday, I believe, about the Duchess of Foxconn, that who has apparently has no compassion in her soul at all, that which surprises me that that being a cancer survivor, you think for some of these people it would activate something in their heads that but for the grace of God go I, for, you know, hard luck and hard knocks and what the system has done for us. And apparently some of these people are just, they don't have it, anything in their hearts anyway, aside from themselves, that they're politically, they go after, you know, self-enrichment, self-aggrandizement, as mentioned in Hamilton's Federalist 75, that they are willing to basically do whatever they want, you know, for themselves, and if it means selling out the will of their constituents or selling out their constituents to others, they will do it. And it was what a lot of these politically, you know, guys that decide they want to go into politics from the time they were hatched, and it's for for themselves rather than in public service. I mean, there's some people that are just truly dedicated to public service, to serving the public, to serving, you know, the public good. And I think for a lot of these, you know, and maybe I'm misjudging them. I can't see into their hearts, actually, but I don't think a lot of these Republicans actually care about the constituents at all anymore. They care about themselves. They care about their donors. They care about the party.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I want to bounce something off you and everybody. I pretended the other night, you know, you've seen a lot of ads on TV. So I pretended the other night that I was a guy that just flew in from some other country, from Europe, you know, from France or Italy or something. And I'm sitting there, don't know any of these people. All I'm doing is looking at them. And here's my impression. When I look at the Duchess of Foxconn's ads, there's kind of an intensity and an anger that comes through. You know, I'm going to protect your wallet and I'm going to protect you in the home against people who try to break in or whatever it is she's saying. And there's a slight, there's an edge and an anger that gives you the willies. Then I look at Kevin Nicholson, and this guy, it's a military thing, and he's swaggering and pushing his way down an aisle among people. And it looks, you know, there's a kind of a faint, faint whiff of violence to it. Then I look at Michaels, and, you know, okay, ah, shucks, you know, I have this company, and sort of a fast talker. Ranthin, of all of them, who's nuttier than a $3 bill. He's nuttier than a $3 bill. He's a QAnon guy, but he comes across as sort of a flat-eyed true believer, but clearly not competent to be governor. Then you look at Evers, and Evers goes on there and say, well, look, I don't care if it's a Republican or a Democratic idea, if it's a good idea, I'm going to lower middle-class taxes, and I just want to get on with things. And, you know, you're not scared of him. He's affable. And he looks like he's talking about an issue that no one has a faintest idea about, but, you know, he seems to be into it. I think that these people have a hard time beating Evers, frankly, because if it's Nicholson and he's kind of shoving his way down an aisle, you know, I mean, there's a little bit of, you know, that's kind of nasty. And then the Duchess looks right out of a Stephen King novel, very, very scary eyes. And then this, you know, this guy Michaels, you know, he's pulling some stuff, and then Ranthin, who actually looks like the least scary physically, but I don't know. This is all stream of consciousness. It's the Matt Flynn directional, so I can do it. Okay, we're going back to the lines. You're next, Jack of Milwaukee, my friend. Thanks for calling, Jack. What's in your mind?
It's an honor to speak to a true patriot and a man who loves this country.
Thank you, Jack.
Yeah, I'd like to have your opinion. A rather surprising thing happened in Virginia. I don't know if you heard about it. The Republican, there's a Republican governor just got in there recently, and he restored all rights to over 3,400 convicts that were in had been serving in prison, and they got their voting rights back and everything. Do you think that might be a coming trend in the Republican governors? I just wanted to get your opinion on that, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jack. Thanks for calling in. You know, the new guy is a Republican. I had not, and maybe it's the case, I hadn't heard that he'd done that. I know that the prior governor, Terry McAuliffe, said he was going to do that and may have done it. So I don't see any attempt by Republican governors anywhere to let convicts vote. In fact, in Florida, they passed a referendum, believe it or not, saying that once felons serve their term, they can vote. The people wanted that. And then DeSantis, the sneaky Republicans, went in and said, yeah, serve his sentence and pay his fines. And there are all these fines of 50 or 100 grand, and none of these guys can pay it because they haven't made any money while they're in prison. So the Republicans have always prevented ex-cons from voting. So you may, what you say may be true about the present Republican guy in Virginia. And I'm going to look into that because that's very interesting. My experience has been it's Democrats that do that. And I'd be surprised if a Republican did it. But the other thing is, I don't know if Republicans ever thought about this, but let's say everybody in prison got to vote, okay, even while they're in prison. Let's just say that. I think it would be majority Republican. You know why? Because a lot of these guys, you know, they have a certain criminal bent. There's a lot of white collar criminals in there too who stole money. And many of them aren't attracted to the Liz Cheney and the Adam Kinzigers, but they're attracted to the Trumpian personalities. So I don't know what the big deal is, but I'm going to look into that, Jack. That's an excellent, excellent point. Thank you for calling. We have other people on the line. We're going to a break. Do not hang up. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. Back after the break.